Hello and welcome to Everyday Oral Surgery. This is your host, Dr. Grant Stuckey. I am an oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in Denver, Colorado. The goal of this podcast is to connect, learn, and inspire. In this podcast, you'll be hearing from OMS surgeons all over the globe discussing ways to improve the practice of oral and maxillofacial surgery. Most information shared in this podcast will be based on personal experience and opinions, so please supplement what you learn here with approved research studies. If you are a regular follower of the podcast, please go to our website, everydayoralsurgery.com, and register to receive newsletters and find links to our social media accounts. Most importantly, if you would like to be interviewed on the podcast or know someone who you'd like to hear from, or if there's a topic you'd like to hear about, please email me at grantstuckey@gmail.com. Without further ado, please enjoy today's episode. All right, welcome to another episode. Today I'm with Dr. Bob McNeil and Steph Ganter, who practice in the great state of Texas. And we've had you guys on the episode before, Bob, a couple times. We've talked about some pretty cool topics. One of my favorite was meditation and how kind of doing that can benefit in your life. But thank you guys again for joining me on the podcast.
Well, Grant, thank you. I'm Bobby.
I'm Stuffy Stuff.
And we're between two teeth. You know, we've got a YouTube channel and a podcast. I can't believe that he invited us back after, you know, we had so much fun the last time we talked about our service mission for Ukrainian citizens.
It was an absolutely phenomenal experience. So thanks so much, Grant, for having us back.
So what are we talking about today? What's on the agenda? What are we getting into?
Well, this one may make some of our oral surgery listeners a little uncomfortable.
But we're kind of good. We like uncomfortable.
Yes, I do too. I love awkward situations. I love Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. It's like the whole show is built on awkwardness. And I think that's where we're going today. Is the topic really is how can an oral surgeon get along with and utilize a periodontist, and how can a periodontist utilize an oral surgeon in their practice, and kind of vice versa.
We'd like to know how that can happen too, because we're an oral surgeon and a periodontist that work together in the same practice.
Coming in hot.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes, this is fantastic. So maybe set the stage by saying, as we all know, there's traditionally oral surgeon in its own office and a periodontist in their own office and kind of doing their own thing, trying to avoid each other. There's some of this overlap, especially, you know, with implants in the last several years and kind of both competing for that. And so there can be some competition, maybe some hard feelings there. But I think with the landscape changing oral surgery and so many practices being bought up and turned into DSO bigger models, it's much more common now for an oral surgery resident to leave, join a larger practice where there is a periodontist involved, and it's kind of a multi-specialty thing along with GP. And so I think a lot of oral surgery residents, maybe I'm wrong, but we had a perio residency in, you know, next to us in the same building. And we would occasionally do an implant conference, but we don't really do much with them. We don't refer much to them, and we kind of try to keep our distance, that type of a thing. And so my first question to you guys is, how do you really work together and utilize each other? What do you guys refer to each other, and how does that help you?
Well, Grant, I got to say, I'm so appreciative that you are kind of taking the leap and having the conversation. I think when you have two different specialties with two different lenses coming together, I think communication and tough conversations like this are at the foundation of a successful partnership. You know, Bobby, did you want to kind of start us off?
You know, so I like that where you said communication and sort of trying to get a sense of where you're coming from, where the other person's coming from, where the rubber meets the road for us. We figured out in our multi-specialty clinic that if we can work better together, it's better for the patients. At the end of the day, if everyone's fat and happy and they're busy enough, and you're doing the right thing for patients, then you can learn a heck of a lot from one another, and you can be better. That's going to require you to have an open mind. It's going to require you to break down past misconceptions. As an OMS, a lot of people do what we do, and we can learn from one another, and multiple people can have a role to play.
Right. And just to kind of add on to that, I think Grant brings up a great point in residency. You know, in my residency program, just like you're kind of talking about with yours, Grant, we had our oral surgery department right next door. So perio and oral surgery, we were neighbors.
Did you guys talk to each other?
We tried not to.
We tried not to talk to the periodontist as well. You're the first periodontist I've actually talked to.
Unlucky you. It's tough. I mean, for a variety of reasons, when you're in residency, it's a tricky spot from an ego perspective. You go from being a top dog in dental school to the bottom of the totem pole. And especially, I got to say that I think surgery in general, or surgical specialties, they attract a little bit more ego. I don't know if that's
I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never met or messed with an ego, including myself.
There's a lot of growth on not only on the person side of things, but also growth on your surgical technique.
Yeah.
If you make a mistake surgically, those are immediate long-term consequences for the patient.
Can I say my quote?
Yeah, go.
Oral maxillofacial surgeons don't use enough sutures. Periodontists use way too many sutures. Somewhere in between there is probably the ideal. Bob McNeil, March 2024.
You know, that's hilarious. But
it's a true statement. One of the first things
I think broad strokes of things.
One of the first things that happened when you came into the practice, and to back it up a touch, we had a multi-specialty clinic. We had ortho, we had endo, we had pediatric dentistry. For some reason, we couldn't find a periodontist that wanted to come into the process.
I think it was a tricky oral surgeon in the building.
I think it was
hard
me.
To work with.
Yeah, it was
I think
me.
That's what the word on the street was.
Yeah, that's literally the word on the street and on the sign. But so we needed a periodontist. I had some really good friends, colleagues who were periodontists, and I said, we're looking for someone. They both named you, surprisingly. I don't know how that happened. But so you came in and you're like, oh my gosh, the sutures you have are disastrous. One of the first things we did, I upped my suture game, and we've gotten to a point where, you know, I am much better at doing what I'm doing just based on that very simple thing of seeing materials that you use, bone grafting materials, membrane materials. That was awesome.
As dentistry gets more and more competitive, patients are looking for better results that are more predictable. I couldn't think of a better time than right now with the business landscape changing how it is than to combine both people under the same roof and both specialties to try to get the best for patients with two different approaches.
Well, and here's the deal. You know, we talked about residency. We sort of train within a silo and, you know, opportunities move, silos don't move. And if you're stuck in a silo, you're going to have problems. I know you did the Harvard Surgical Leadership Program through Harvard Medical School. You're the only dentist in a program of surgeons from all over the world.
Yeah, all over the world.
And you sort of got a global view of how different surgical specialties are working together.
And it was instructive for me because the communication challenges that perio and oral surgery may have, it's not specific to us. There's that, you know, of course, there's, you know, other surgeons and other surgical specialties not only had difficulties communicating in this program, but also across countries. There also ended up being, you know, political differences among surgeons. And so you see really quickly, man, if we can solve one of these problems, why can't we solve a lot more?
You're not wrong. And I found the same thing. I did a healthcare management leadership MBA. It was all physicians, and just seeing how neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons versus internal medicine docs and psychiatrists, you know, it gets back to what Grant's talking about. And what you said, Steph, is communication, communication, communication. You were going to disagree on a whole lot of things. And if you are in a group practice setting, if you don't appropriately communicate or seek first to understand, why is it that you do this? Or why is it that you want to do this in the practice? It can really set you up for disaster. And we probably shouldn't let people think that this has been an easy go.
So yeah, so segueing into that, it's all about trust. And so if you are an oral surgeon going into practice with a periodontist, the first thing is there has to be some ground rules. You want to trust each other. Specifically, the most basic is to not throw each other under the bus, especially when it comes to patients. And although as a dental community at large, I think we all try not to do that, but having a coffee with your periodontist and throwing around some word selection and some passing through some scenarios and saying, hey, if this came into the practice, I might say this. And you might be surprised that some of the things that maybe you thought were not negative might be a little bit distant or, you know, not so nice.
Listen, when you trust and respect one another and you have goodwill, and it takes time to build up goodwill, then you can have some issues that happen there. You know, let's talk about where the rubber meets the road in our own practice. You know, I was asked to remove a failing implant from a number four site. Number three was not present. Teeth had shifted. No bone at this area at all. Sinus is close by. And I wanted Steph to come in to take a look at things. And this was a older patient. And in our practice, we're like, oh, you're going to get two doctors for the price of one. I want Dr. Ganner, the periodontist, to come in and take a look. And then once you carry the story, how was your impact or insight different from mine?
Right. So it was actually great. You know, patients oftentimes when they come in for a consult, their perspective is limited and narrow. What Bob and I aim to do by giving two different approaches is say, hey, there's a few different ways to do this. And what it does is it helps us set expectations for the patient. And it really shows them, you know, there's a lot of possibilities here. And it also helps us gauge the personality in the chair, what their spouse might be thinking. And there's an extreme benefit because as a periodontist, I'm going to have a different look-see based on the tools in my toolbox, just as Bob will.
And frankly, I think your specialty does a really good job at being mindful of inflammation and inflammatory systemic conditions and just how that's going to impact what we're going to do. You know, you taught me a lot with respect to that. Okay, you can work on one site, but you know, you have adjacent or semi-adjacent inflammatory conditions, you're setting yourself up for failure.
No, all of that's fantastic.
Oh.
And another note on this, if you are a periodontist or an oral surgeon and you're going to be going to work with the other specialty, let's talk about interprofessional education. And this could mean even watching the other provider do a case so you can understand where they're coming from. Where you might think an incision design is an absolute, like you would always put it here, you'd always drop a vertical on a certain case. If you watch the other provider, you're probably going to learn something about either a flap design or a specific case management.
No, that's a terrible way to say it. You're literally going to learn. Yeah, you're not probably. Frankly, I've learned a lot from you. I'm hoping you've learned something from me. And even when you don't want a second opinion, you know, we'll call each other in and just say, hey, I want you to see this. And this is why I'm doing it this way. Now, sometimes you'll say, okay, I hear what you're saying, but I'd still do it this way. And we have a fair amount of dialogue take place regarding differing opinions on things. And that's okay.
Right. I don't want to sugarcoat this.
It's not easy. It's not easy.
It really isn't. And there are some days after clinic that, for me, though, I haven't been out more than 5 years in practice. Yeah. So there's a layered effect here. I'm trying to establish myself as a provider, which is super tough when you're in practice with an experienced oral surgeon. So there's a different dynamic there. If you're coming to the table as an experienced provider, maybe you will not have as many of the communication challenges as I have.
I agree. And I think many of the things you're talking about is just, you know, one is OMS versus perio, and the other is just a newer practitioner versus someone who's been out for a while. You know, I love to use ChatGPT for a variety of things, but I mostly like to use AI to help me think differently. By having a perio in the practice has helped me to think differently. You've changed my mind on some things. You have not changed my mind on other things, but it is, at the end of the day, it has made me a better provider for patients, and it's been more fulfilling. Tough, Yes. Fulfilling? Yes.
And I love how you say think differently. When we talk about interprofessional education and thinking differently from different perspectives, we are in a referral-based profession. Sure, there's some more direct-to-consumer marketing, especially with corporate offices. And if you are in a system that provides you those internal referrals, maybe this is not as important, but you need to educate your referral base and try to present this idea of a periodontist and the oral surgeon working in harmony. One of the first questions we get from referrals is, well, who do we refer to? And I'll just throw something out, you know, implants. Who do we refer our implant cases to? And there's no right answer here, but one way where we have tried to show this unified approach is that we say, refer them to the practice. Yeah. And let Bob and I look at the tools in our own toolboxes. And there's an understanding that the patient's going to get the best in the whatever scenario walks in the door. So if sometimes that's me, sometimes that's Bob. Yeah. It just depends.
Which gets to ego and knowing when it makes sense to involve the other. And we, quite frankly, we do it a fair amount.
You guys have brought up a lot of good points, I think.
Grant's like, dear diary.
It's like the shotgun approach. You guys just blast me with all these ideas.
That's what we do. Have we had a lot of caffeine this morning? Yes.
You're kind of touching and dancing around some of the awkward situations. And I think in your setting, it's much more fluid because, let's say, maybe Bob owns the practice and he brings Stephanie in. And so he's motivated from the beginning to get along with her and kind of make this work and understand what's going on. I think in a setting maybe like I've been in, and I think a lot of guys are going into, is, you know, they're just joining a practice and then a periodontist. They're both independent contractors and they kind of start bristling at each other really over the overlapping procedures, like basically bone grafting and implants. And so, and I think it's very unfortunate that that small area of our practice has to create such a divide for us because, you know, if we didn't have overlap, it would be very easy. You know, I could, because I can call my orthodontist and say, hey, what do you think about this case? Blah, blah, blah. You know, there's no threat there. There's no issues. But like you're saying, DSO, when a patient comes in the practice, all of a sudden it's this big whole competing situation of like, well, why are you sending him to perio? And then perio, why are you sending it to OS? And in our case, it's like, okay, the oral surgeon has more schooling, I can sedate the patient, I can do X, Y, and Z better. And then the periodontist says their argument, well, I do soft tissue better, I do suturing better, I do this. And we're like, everyone's fighting over these patients and it can get pretty just ridiculous. And we start overlooking the strengths of each person. And so I like what you guys are saying about how you work together.
And Grant, you brought up, I mean, bristling. I love that word selection because that's a real nice way to put frustration at its deepest level. You just get out of residency. You're supposed to be the surgeon. And now you've got this, I mean, and with all due respect to Perry, you have this JV person around who's kind of putting a thorn in your side to say, no, actually, I should be the expert. And especially as independent contractors, you kind of eat what you kill. And where I think it could be set up better to help both specialists out is for whoever owns the practice to look at the practice model and say, can we afford two surgeons here? And it's just because they're both going to place implants, they're going to both sedate patients. You know, perhaps wisdom teeth is something that is going to be in the oral surgeon's realm. But you have a lot of periodontists that are making arguments that say, hey, I do take out wisdom teeth, I do place implants, I do suture, I do have the soft tissues. And so as you have these corporate organizations start to learn from kind of past personnel miscues, I think the question they should be asking themselves is there enough things to do for two surgeons in the building and create that environment?
Well, as I hear Grant talk, you know, there's some financial disincentives to work together in what you're talking about. I think from a corporate entity perspective, you know, you want your staffing, including your surgeons, to be able to have appropriate relationships. What I thought about as well, you know, at the end of the day, ethically, as professionals, we have the obligation to really put the patient's best interests paramount. And it also gets into risk mitigation and risk management. You know, I'm on the state board here in Texas and see a whole lot of untoward events in all sorts of areas. And a DSO does not want bad outcomes for patient satisfaction or hospitalizations or having to redo stuff. But there's a level of nuance there that gets tricky. And ego and money, you know, money, power, and relationships control so many things. And to Grant's point, you know, we've kind of backtracked a little bit on that in our own type of practice. And maybe it's a way of revenue sharing as a DSO looks at the surgical providers and say, okay, we're going to have a little bit of a different structure where the two of you or three or four compete in some things, but there may be a revenue share model that is a little different to encourage people to work together.
I like what you're saying there, Bobby. And it's almost treat them like two siblings. And if mom and dad favors
and siblings
one,
never fight.
Yeah, it's just not going to be, you know, you can choose the type of relationship you want with your sibling. Yeah. And it doesn't mean you both don't have your space to shine.
And to Steph's point, you know, there's a continual evolution. The only thing that's constant is change. And I think for OMS, you know, I think especially in the past couple of years, the leaders have sort of appreciated we can't have ourselves on an island. And we are best served when people look at us as we want to be part of a solution. And that's going to mean working with other people. You know, Steph and I were invited to the dental implant conference through AMIS a couple of years ago. We're actually giving two talks at the AMIS annual session coming up, one on communication and effectiveness. The other one's actually on kind of well-being. AMIS, through Dr. Paul Schwartz, has been very involved in sort of the well-being initiative and working with the ADA.
Dr. Schwartz is amazing. He was one of the first people that kind of came up to me and at AMIS and was like, hey, we want to work better together.
Yeah. He likes you better than me. He goes, where's Steph? Steffy Steph here. He's one of our subscribers on the 282T.
What Dr. Schwartz kind of taught me in that moment was that to work with somebody else, especially when you have two big egos involved, man, and it's kind of changed how I look at things too, based on his example, is just you have to give respect to get respect. And it's a tough lesson for me. I'm not great at giving the respect. And so I don't get a lot of it. But I've tried to change where I try to give more respect at the outset, even though, you know, I may not feel complete or fully fulfilled. And I really try to go out on a limb a little earlier than I used to try to, you know, just lay the groundwork of goodwill. And yeah, it doesn't come back every time, but a lot of times it does.
Here's the deal. This is one of the things I learned. I did a public policy fellowship at Harvard Kennedy School a couple of years ago. And one of the professors, fantastic guy, was a presidential advisor for four different presidents, is like, you can be the smartest person in the room, but you may not be the most effective. And figuring out how to be effective. And yes, it's managing your ego. It's managing other people's egos. It's building goodwill. I think we need to write a manual for how a periodontist and an OMS can get along. Or you just wrote something on Substack. Is that what that was?
I'd love to hear Grant's take.
We'll charge $1 for it. Can we charge money on Substack?
You can, yeah.
Oh, well, we should. Maybe $2.
That's like a riveting article or book. Or...
well, and I think, Grant, you help. Well, riveting. That's a strong word. Yeah. You know, it'll be different. We will say that. But I guess, you know, a whole lot of life, people try to find happiness. You know, our push with Between Two Teeth is sort of well-being and living a life best lived. I don't like the term happiness because there's times you can't be happy. You know, you're in an environment with doing everything that we do. There's times that things are not happy at all. So I actually myself, I try to strive for peace because I think that's more important. And a lot of that peace can be determined by the differential, the delta between expectations and reality. And knowing that for an OMS and a perio to work together, you should expect there's going to be times of disagreement, period. I can probably end it there. But there's also times that you're really going to work well together.
And again, I'd love to get Grant's take on some of the stuff we've been talking about.
He thinks we're making it all up, I think. What do you think, Grant?
There's a couple of things you guys have said I really like. One was Steph's comment about getting to know the other person, seeing what they do, even observing, shadowing them. I think if they're willing to do that is awesome, and it could be a great thing. I like, similar to what you were saying, how you learned from her with the suturing type stuff. I think that is so important for us. And I think I would guess it's usually the periodontist is more open to learning from the oral surgeon. And unfortunately, it's much more harder for the oral surgeon to learn from the periodontist, because we have this unfortunate chip on our shoulder where we say, hey, I went to more schooling. I did more intense cases. I did all this stuff. And what do I have to learn from a periodontist, right? It's this unfortunate mental block we have. And I feel the same way. Like after I got over that block, it took me a couple of years. I started calling and talking to some periodontists that I realized were like, wow, they have good results. And how are they doing this? And what's going on? And I started getting this new respect for one in particular, who's a friend of mine. And all of a sudden it turned from like an enemy to like a mentor. I think there's a lot to be learned, like you're saying. And it's unfortunate that we can sometimes have a mental block and ego can get in the way.
Grant, that's very well said. You hit it on the head. And it's just that it's hard to step across the aisle, especially if you come from more years of education. If I can put myself into it, I can have sympathy for it. You gave a lot of your time. The hours are forever more intense. And the cases, there's more on those cases. And what Bob and I talked about initially, as far as just our differences and similarities in training, but, you know, something a periodontist does is the alveolar ridges, and we get a big magnifying glass and we zoom in on the alveolar ridges for 3 years, bone grafting, soft tissue, suturing, all different types of tools and instrumentation, everything to get that extra millimeter. And sometimes an extra millimeter matters. And sometimes to Bob's point that he makes sometimes, hey, the body's going to heal and it's more important just for the body to heal than to get an extra millimeter. And so it's really, you know, Grant, exactly what you're saying, knowing how to get that chip off your shoulder and knowing when to cross the aisle. And then also one of common I've heard from an oral surgery buddy is that, hey, I tried to work with a periodontist and one, I wasn't impressed. And two, they kind of blew me off. So I'm not going to do that anymore. They're like any profession, there's a spectrum of personalities on both sides. And hey, if it didn't work out with one periodontist or one oral surgeon, try not to have that taint your view for the entire profession. The next one you meet might be completely different. And so just kind of holding up the greater good and trying to maybe bypass that first tricky personality that you interacted with could help.
Here's what I would say. If you're in a coffee shop, and you turn around to the person behind you, they can do many things a lot better than you can do them. And if you are closed-minded, and if you think that, you know, you can't learn something from someone else, you're not going to grow, and someone's going to pass you by.
Totally agree. Got to drop it and learn from each other for sure.
Yeah. And as I said, I'm really encouraged what our specialty is doing. I love our specialty. I think our training is great. There's many things we can do, but there's also so many things that we can participate and be leaders with others on patient safety issues regarding anesthesia, on things like well-being. Right now, provider wellness is a huge issue. Steph, I know you're a wellness ambassador with the American Dental Association, and we had a chance to have, what was the meeting they just had last year?
It was the Well-Being Summit.
The Well-Being Summit. Amos was the only specialty that was represented there. And I had reached out to Dr. Paul Schwartz and said, hey, this is happening. He goes, I am passionate about this. This is something we're starting a provider program through Amos for substance use disorders, and we want to be there. And he was there. Karen, the executive director of Amos, was there. And Deb Sackow, trustee with Amos, was there as well. And they were in the front row. So some things are happening. And one of the things I like to do, I like to push Unfortunately, sometimes that causes problems. But like with working in this kind of model, you know, we've been pushing it and we're speaking at Amos and people are picking up some of that messaging.
And question for Grant and Bobby here. And Grant, you had mentioned you had to shed whatever layer and just say, hey, I am going to reach across the aisle. I'm curious, you know, there was something about procedure or something you saw from a periodontist that you were like, yeah, maybe there's something different. And so between you and Bobby, how did you make that leap, that jump?
Hey guys, real quick, KLS Martin is offering a 35% discount on my favorite KLS Martin instruments for everyday oral surgery listeners. So there's a link in the podcast notes with a full listing and a video highlighting some of the advantages of using KLS Martin instrumentation. To utilize this offer, use promo code STUCKYFAVES with a capital S and a capital F. So capital S, lowercase T-U-C-K-I, capital F, lowercase A-V-S. And you can use that through your KLS Martin sales rep or by emailing usa@klsmartin.com. I handpicked these instruments based on the kind of favorite extraction instruments that I use on a daily basis, and I hope you enjoy them.
Well, so for me, it was in the implant, placing implants in the aesthetic zone, and I'm a surgeon who, like, I got a lot of great training in implants. I placed, you know, over 150, 200 implants. For an oral surgeon, that's a lot in residency. And so I felt pretty good, you know, thought I knew what I was doing. And then I got out and I had some, you know, bad cases with some aesthetic zone cases that didn't work out like I wanted it to. And, you know, some of the offices would kind of start saying, let's go to this periodontist instead of Dr. Stuckey because he had these couple bad cases. And then inevitably our offices always screw up the schedule. And so I'll like see his follow-ups on my schedule and they'll like come to me for the uncovery. It's like, you know what? Insulting thing, slap your face. The periodontist puts the implant and you do the uncovery. It's like, talk about humiliating. But I'm the kind of person who's like, if they're in my chair, I'm going to help them out. I'm not going to be like, hey, I didn't do this implant. And so I would text this guy, hey, it's looking good. Here's some pictures. What do you think? Are you cool with me uncovering this implant or doing whatever it needs to be done? And he's a pretty chill guy. And I was always like, oh, for sure. Thanks for doing that. So I started talking to him. Hey, you know, I really like what I'm seeing here on some of your follow-ups. It looks good. I'm taking these CBCTs. The healing looks great. What are you doing? You know, can you give me some insider information? And so for me, it was just the desire to do better and help my patients and have better results. And I was able, you know, to kind of get over any pride. It probably helped that this periodontist, you know, had been out of practice much longer than I had and was much more experienced at implants. And so it was easier for me just to drop all pretenses and say, hey man, what's going on? I need some help. That was great. I think to me, it's like kind of analogous to, like, you know how the neurosurgeon and an orthopedic surgeon, they both work on the spine, but then they both work on a bunch of other stuff that's not related. And so I had a back surgery and I was like kind of going back and forth, who's better? And they all pitched their things about, oh, the neurosurgeon's going to be more careful with the nerves and they're not going to screw things up. They're more delicate. And the orthopedics, well, the orthopedics just going to get her done, you know, like that's what we do. We take out some big chisels and we start whacking, you know, it's like, that's analogous to the oral surgeon and the periodontist. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I had a neurosurgeon and an orthopedic surgeon in my MBA class, and they had constant banter back and forth. But I like what you talked about there, just our preconceptions or preconceived ideas. If you don't want to learn and get better, then don't listen to a single thing we've said. And just turn off the podcast right now.
And
Grant's going to edit that out. He's like, I cannot believe they just said,
do not do this.
Grant, I appreciate the vulnerability on your story. I can relate being in the phase of my career where I am new in practice. I can relate to that in a big way.
You came out and you were highly confident.
And it's just, I mean, we need providers, quite frankly, like you, Grant, that are putting the patient first. And not only that, is after you asked for just like, hey, you know, what do you think on this? Think of how many residents have benefited from your branching out. And now when they get out, they're going to be the person that someone might ask, and say, hey, how do I do this? You know,
seek first to understand and be okay asking.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
You didn't answer my first one.
That's how I roll. What's your question?
Well, my question to you and Grant had a great answer, was that, you know, why did you even, like, what was your why? Why did you reach across the aisle?
Because I wanted to get better. And we had the concept of a multi-specialty center. We needed a periodontist to complete that model. And then just me personally, I felt good about myself and thought, okay, yeah, I need to learn. I'm better if I learn. And you helped me on a long learning journey. Now, my question to you is, what did you learn by working with an OMS?
A ton.
Oh,
I mean,
good. That's it.
Max examples. Benefit on my perspective, it helped me appreciate in a big way what you guys go through and gals go through. It's a phenomenal. You know, my program director talked about, you know, respect and ego in our residency, and he goes, some of the people that definitely have earned the right to have an ego are oral maxillofacial surgeons because of what they go through to benefit dentistry as a whole. And so, yeah, I've learned so much from Bob just in a emergency management of the patient, the medicine. Man, it's what I am constantly trying to catch up on in our practice as we see some of the sickest patients in our area. I have to, you know, scramble to catch up on the medicine. And that's something that, you know, Bob's helped with a lot. And from a IV sedation perspective and a patient safety perspective, emergency management, and then just technique and working with other providers. One of the cool things that I think oral surgeons bring to the table is how they interact with the community, their position in a referral group. And so I've been able to benefit off of that, off of those relationships. And I've been able to benefit with how patients just kind of look and learn from you and how our providers look and learn to you.
I like that a lot. You know, something I've seen, which is kind of unfortunate, is when you're in this group setting, oftentimes I see the oral surgeon almost throwing up their hands in regards to implants and saying, you know what? That's fine. The periodontist can just do implants and I'll stick to wisdom teeth. And, you know, I mean, wisdom teeth are easier and implants, they're just more follow-up and more problems can happen. So yeah, screw trying to learn more about implants or do more or anything like that. Just take them. And, you know, that type of a thing. I've seen that happen with some friends of mine. And I refuse to do that because I had great training in implants. I love doing it. And so for me, it's the opposite direction. But I would hate for that competition there just to make one or the other kind of shrink and the other grow. I'd like to see both grow together and learn. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. There's no reason that as a provider, you can't, if you want to just do wisdom teeth, that's great. But absolutely, to your point, Grant, if you are someone who is like, no, I had great training in implants, I'm not gonna step aside here because I find the joy in that. That's part of my profession.
That's part of
what I want to do.
I like what Grant said there. Grow together. Yeah. If you don't want to grow together, turn off this podcast. Grant will never invite us back.
Well, we're gonna edit that one out too.
You can grow, you can learn. You got to put your ego where it needs to be.
Educate your referrals. You need referrals with a more flexible mindset. Some referrals have interacted with a oral surgeon that they really like, and they have no room for a periodontist. And some referrals, it's the exact opposite. And one of the things that Bobby and I had to do with our referrals is really get them into a flexible mindset of, look, you're referring to our practice, and we're going to put the patient above everything else. And together, we are going to care for this patient. And that has worked tremendously. And it just comes back to communication.
Yeah. And it gets back to Grant's point. If it is a DSO, there needs to be leadership that says, this is important to us. And, you know, as a regulator, I've seen DSOs evolve and you know, things from 10 years ago, they're different now. And patient satisfaction risk mitigation. Financially, it's a disincentive to have work that needs to be redone.
And if you're a resident looking at a DSO model, it's kind of like asking about residency programs with a program director. When you're interviewing, say, hey, how are patients divvied up?
Yeah.
And how do you guys treat the different specialties?
So let's do, to get to Grant's point of, you know, if you're a periodontist that's in a DSO, you're a new grad, what would you say to an OMS to say, can I come in and watch you do a case?
So the scenario is I'm a new grad.
You're a new grad. You just started with this DSO. I'm an oral surgeon. I've been out in practice for 20 years.
Right.
I'm a little bit cranky.
I'd want to say before signing on the dotted line, that's a scenario that a periodontist wants to be careful on. If you have an established oral surgeon at this DSO office, it depends on what procedures you want to do as a periodontist, but you need to ask questions about, okay, how am I going to be treated as far as how do I get patients?
So let's get to the question though about how are you going to interact with me? I'm grumpy old.
Well, that's my point, is that relationships, right. The foundation has to be there. And if you walk into a situation thinking you're going to place a lot of implants, I've had some corporate offices when I was looking for places to work, you know, 5 years ago, I was like, hey, you know, I'm a periodontist. I'm looking for a job. And they're like, we don't have any use for a periodontist in this corporation. We just hire oral surgeons and that's it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that kind of got me thinking like the foundation's important. You got to figure out what's going on. But say you're in there. First thing, have coffee with the oral surgeon.
Don't come in hot.
That oral surgeon has got to be your best friend. And
now, is that true?
It really is, because it's the person who is going to be doing the most similar things to you at the office. And what I found is siblings who are similar or friends who are very similar perhaps might fight a little bit more. And especially if you're new in practice, you want to have a foundation, a relationship with this person versus leaving it to chance, which if you leave it to chance, the chances of it going south are high.
Okay. I'm going to answer my own question then, because
you don't like my answer.
Well, I get what you're talking about. I was trying to get where the rubber meets the road. So we're going to change the scenario. You're a periodontist. You've been in practice for 20 years. You've got experience. I'm a new grad. I'm an OMS. I'm going to look at it and say, how can I build goodwill with this person? And I may say, hey, would it be
That's
okay?
That's exactly what
yeah,
I was saying.
Well,
and now we introduce communication.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to say, you know, would it be okay if I came in and just kind of watched you do X procedure?
Right, specifically
I'd really like to kind of learn and see just kind of what Grant said. You've got good outcomes. I'd love to kind of learn.
Right, your specific question was not that you create a relationship with the other provider. Your specific question is, how do you do that?
Yeah, how do you do it?
So this is an excellent example of how two different people, Bob's asking this question, I'm answering it going, how could you not glean from this? And Bob's like, I'm going to ask it again because you didn't answer it. This is why you need to have a working relationship.
And I don't listen well. I'm working on. I hate to listen.
And this is the other thing. If I didn't know Bob, I would be so offended by that. But I know him and I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm going to let these go. I'm going to let it go because maybe I'm not clear.
Well,
how about that?
So you're not. And one of the things we're talking about at Amos is actually being clear.
Poor Grant this morning. He's just like,
exactly.
Dear diary, I'm going to let these guys talk. Yeah.
No,
and then at some point, I'm going to cut them off.
So here's the deal. One of the things I've learned, if you want to be effective, you are well served to be clear and kind.
Brene Brown.
That was something we learned at Brene Brown. Clear and kind. We think we're clear. Most of the time, we're not clear. And being kind, we meant to be kind. But how many times have we not been kind if we're talking to our assistants or talking to a colleague? You are effective if you're clear and kind. You can give hard, clear information in a kind way, but that takes nuance and it takes practice.
I want Grant to feel like he can definitely ask questions and say whatever
podcast.
He wants
yeah.
to say.
I keep telling
I'll talk forever. But
turn it off.
I want to make sure
we will both talk forever. But yeah, Grant, what are you thinking as we
Well, I love this topic and this point you're talking about, especially like that initial conversation that can happen there between how do I get in the door or how do I let someone in the door? Because I think first off, like when I just hear Bob putting this scenario out there, the old cranky surgeon and the young periodontist saying, you know, can I come in? I think the old cranky guy very often going to think, well, I don't want this young periodontist coming in and stealing my secrets and learning stuff. And no, you know, let's keep our distance here. And I've learned one good way to get in the door is to be very specific with your why. And also, like Bob saying, throw in the compliment and the kindness. So usually I'll be like, you know, hey, Dr. Guayo, like I just keep seeing good cases from you. And I hear from other people who've worked with you that you suture really well. Like, do you mind if I stop by? Because I really want to up my suture game and just see kind of your suturing technique. And all of a sudden he's like, you know, very not flattered, but like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. This guy has a specific need. He wants to learn a little better. Come on in. Like, it'd be rare for him to be like, no, I don't want you to learn my suturing technique. That's a secret.
And start small.
But you'd be surprised. Sometimes people will be like that. And I, you know, okay, so you just hit it on the head, Grant. It's about the foundation. There is so much upside and there's so much potential here with perio and oral surgery working together, but the foundation has to be right. And, yeah. You know, Bob, when you ask the question, how do you do this? What do you look for? If you don't have two willing participants, it's not going to happen.
If you don't want to grow, it's really hard to be willing. And, you know, this is where it takes leadership. It takes leadership perhaps from above, or it takes you as a practitioner, if you're an independent contractor, to step up as a leader and say, if we want to do our best, we are going to be served to learn from one another.
And if you talk about motivators, you know, even from a business owner perspective, financial motivation, our practice would not have grown if we could not work together, if we didn't, you know, do the groundwork with the referrals, if we didn't do the groundwork, you know, just kind of figuring out how we were going to do things, it would have imploded, quite frankly.
Yeah. It takes understanding, it takes patience, and it takes communication that is clear and kind. And sometimes I'm very unclear and not kind.
Yeah, and I'm working to pick. You are working on it, and you're the man.
Yeah, you are working on it. I love it.
No, I was just going to say, to piggyback off your other very initial comment that Steph made about not speaking poorly about colleagues, I would piggyback on that and say that I have never grown a practice at all by saying any bad things about anybody, and it's the total reverse. Like, it always grows more when I say, you know, I'm sure that this was a complicated scenario. This Dr. Jones who does these, you know, implants is so experienced. And so I know if it went bad in his hands and there's difficulty, it probably would have been the same in my hands. You know, I'm like constantly doing stuff like that because I feel like it always comes back in a good way to me when I uplift other people in patient's eyes. And it's always bad. No matter how much you think you're doing something good for the patient, when you start dogging on other providers, and I can't believe they did this, it just is a bad feeling that is generated. And also a patient, maybe you'll gain one patient and they'll be like, oh yeah, yeah, that was wrong. I want you to do this, doctor. But everyone sees what you're doing at some point and it's just not good. So let's be positive, rising, folks.
Rising water lifts all boats. And one of the blessings for me as a state board regulator, by necessity, I have to interact with all different types of stakeholders and just everybody. And if you are stuck on an island by yourself, whether you're in just a private practice and you're all alone, or you just don't get out there and talk to others, you're just not going to grow. And you're not going to grow better together, to Grant's point.
All about learning from each other, growing, doing what's best for our patients, and just dropping, I think, you get past the pride, the mentality of competition. I think once you lose all that, it just only benefits your practice, your work, your learning, your patients.
Ego, ego, ego.
Yeah.
I was surprised in my MBA how much time during the MBA program we actually spent on things like ego and effectiveness and soft skills. Like, to back to the point of, if you're asking somebody, can I come in and watch you? You come in hot. That's probably not going to work, as opposed to figuring out a nuance of what works well, what's going to roll off your tongue as you talk to someone. That's why we talk a lot and give continuing education CE courses, because so much of patient care is communication. Steph and I both did integrative medicine fellowships for the University of Arizona School of Medicine a couple of years back. And they really push things for communication. You know, good communication is actually good medicine. You're getting a patient on board from a regulatory lens. You know, oh gosh, how many state board cases do I see that are a result of poor communication? We all have bad outcomes. And if you haven't had a bad outcome, you haven't practiced long enough, because you'll get them. And figuring out, okay, nuance-wise, how do I get out of a bad outcome? And that's where interprofessionally with Steph and myself, Perio OMS, we've bailed each other out of various scenarios. That's really nice to have. I've had Steph do some things with soft tissue and even just suturing where I'm like, can you please help me out here? But also just how you communicate what's going to happen. It's so key. Do you have any comment about that, Steph? You look like you're ready to say something.
No. I love what you're talking about with the communication is key, not only with our patients, our referrals between providers is what our topic is today. And you've bailed me out of a ton of stuff.
Well, not a ton, but you know.
I am coming from the perspective of a new doc. It is great pride for me that as a new doc, I've been able to teach anything to someone who's experienced, has the experience.
You know, when you first came into practice, you're like, do you not do CBCTs on all dental implants? And at the time I wasn't. And I had a CBCT machine, you know, long time ago. I was the first person kind of in the North Texas area that had one. I was trying to be overly mindful of, I'm not going to be the guy that has the hammer and everything's a nail. And so I kind of underutilized it because I didn't want to overcharge patients. Yeah. And I really wasn't smart about it. And you came in and you're like, why are we not doing CBCTs on all the implants? I'm like, oh my gosh,
And this is just a different training modality. I'm from a school of, you know, digital guided, you know, dynamic guided navigation. And you need not only DICOMs for that, but you also need STLs. And so introducing intraoral scanners, trying to figure out how to print more stuff.
A lot of that stuff's great. And a lot of that stuff just drives me bonkers. And I'm like, okay, but
don't get me started.
Are we a better practice because of that? Are we able to get better patient care because
we are a more complete practice because of it? And what happens is the patient can choose a lot of different options.
Yeah.
And we like to think that we can provide more of those options under one roof in a very highly specialized way.
Yeah. And it's a satisfaction, you know, learning new things and different techniques and improving your skill set. Who doesn't want to do that? If you don't want to do that, turn off the podcast, because
Bob's asked people to turn off this podcast about 5 times. So
if you want to learn, keep the podcast rolling. Yeah.
So okay, that's a clear and kind, better way of saying keep it going if you want to learn. But here's the challenge. When you've been in practice for a while, sometimes you lose that drive to learn. I loved doing my MBA, especially because it was healthcare management and leadership, because I learned a new language. I loved operations management as a course. You have a different language and a different lens at which you see everything. When I did the integrative medicine fellowship, I looked at every single interaction that I do in a very different way.
Yes, I hear you on that. And speaking of interactions, if you're a resident listening to this and you're in your final years and you're looking for jobs, and maybe it will be with a corporate structure, maybe it'll be in a private practice. One of the things that you can do is, wherever you end up, get to know the more experienced surgeons in the area, whether it is a periodontist or oral surgeon. What it's going to do, it's going to find someone to cover for you if you're ever out of the office. It's the trick to fall into, and I definitely fell into this, is you're in school for so long and it's painful. And when you finally get out, you're like, okay, freedom. I'm never going to be under someone's thumb again. I'm going to call the shots. I'm finally the expert. You know, patients are going to flock. Like, I know the world has been waiting.
That's literally like, how she
did. I need to just get out there and then the world will see what they've been missing.
And
not like that.
It's not like that. It's an expectation management
challenge. Yeah, it really isn't. And you're going to learn much quicker if you have the more experienced surgeons in the area, even if they're your direct competition, if they help you. And by the way, they do want to help. If you can reach out, Grant, like kind of like you were talking to.
I love that you said that. You know, we've done like an extended mission trip work out of the country, and our quote competitors actually cover our practice. And they're like, you know, they've actually made some really nice comments to us to say, we love that you're doing what you're doing. And it is so nice for us to have that level of support. It gives me goosebumps just thinking about that, because, you know, your competitors, we're all in the same game. We're trying to help patients, and it makes our lives easier knowing that they're there. And of course, it's reciprocated.
Well said.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, hopefully we've touched on some important points here. I think, you know, reach across the aisle, be kind when you're doing it, try to learn from each other. You know, one thing too, because I honestly love shadowing, and like just last week I was shadowing a surgeon who's just a year out of school. But I learned so much from him, just seeing him for a couple hours. He's an oral surgeon, but I think that's how I learn, is seeing what people do and kind of getting into it. And anytime anyone asks me, I work with occasionally GPs and orthodontists and endo, and they'll ask me, hey, do you mind if I shadow and watch and see what you're doing? And I'll totally, man, check it out. Because I know, you know, these people, a lot of them is just to get information and just to see, what does Dr. Stuckey do and what can I refer to him? And I think we need to drop the mentality of like, you know, people are stealing our secrets and learning all this stuff. And let's share. I mean, that's the whole goal of this podcast, honestly. I've given every secret I think I have in this podcast because I want people to learn and grow. Let people learn from us and keep constantly trying to learn from other people. And I will just say, when I shadow a periodontist, I didn't do that to steal all their secrets and do everything, because I think the oral surgeon, the Renaissance oral surgery man, thinks in his mind, I can do any procedure, right? Like that's what Bob's thinking right now.
The Renaissance. I love it. I'm going to call myself that from now on as I enter the patient room. I'm the Renaissance.
I like the Renaissance.
Wow.
But right? Like we think as an oral surgeon, I think in my mind, there's nothing a periodontist does that I can't do, right? And I think that's sometimes faulty thinking, that we have to do everything the other person does. And I think it's good to shadow just to be like, oh my gosh, that is cool. I like how they do crown lengthening. I respect that. I'm not going to do that, but at least I know how they do it. And I'm going to refer for that reason.
You shouldn't do everything.
And Grant, I love what you're saying, because have the confidence that it took you years to do what you're doing. And someone shadowing you one day, it's just not going to be enough for them to start doing exactly what you do to the level that you do it. And so I love that comment.
And what I would say, and I'll put my regulatory hat back on again, you know, there are negative outcomes that are happening from people who are not trained appropriately, who are not taking factors in. You know, I loved a dental implant conference I went to before. It's like, hey, do one miracle at a time. Well, I had this patient and they were a smoker and a diabetic and cardiovascular disease and did XYZ all at once. And oh, it didn't work. Oh, that's a surprise. No, it's not a surprise at all. You should have seen it coming. And unfortunately, you learn so much through seeing things fail. You know, failure is a tremendous teacher. I've learned very little from success. Having that, if you can put the patient outcome as paramount, figure out the financials, because if there's a disproportionality in finances, then that kind of messes the situation up. But, you know, Grant, you've done a lot for our specialty, for the profession, based on a lot of the conversations you're having. You know, who would have a oral surgeon and a periodontist on the same podcast, you know?
Thanks for having us, Grant. Yes,
thanks for having us. Hopefully you don't feel as though you've been had.
No, this has been awesome.
But it's a great, this is an important conversation. It really is an important conversation.
Yeah.
And we got to keep it going, and we're going to push to try to be better. And as soon as you think you've got the world figured out, you're done. Because the world keeps evolving and things are changing, and what got you here won't get you there.
Boom.
Terrific book, by the way. It's a hard book if you ever want to pull that one up. But I'm interested in being effective and having fun. You got to have fun as well. We like to have fun.
Your analogy is likened to that of marriage or parenting, Bob. I feel like, you know, a parent for one day feels like they got it all down. And me, I've been a parent for 16 years. And like every year goes by, I feel like I know less. I'm just like, how do I parent these kids? This is crazy. No, I think the more experience you have, the more failures you go through, and the more you start being, okay, I can see how I need to learn more about this topic or be more careful in this setting, and all that type of stuff comes with experience.
And I think, Grant, you know, we are in a well-being and mental health crisis in the U.S. and in the profession of dentistry. You know, Steph, as I said, is an ADA wellness ambassador. I'm with the ADA on the dental team wellness advisory committee. In Texas here, we actually changed our licensure regulations to get away from, have you ever had to get help for mental health or substance use disorder things, because those questions were stigmatizing and prevented people from getting help that they needed. And there's so many important things. And failure, you're going to fail. And if you're listening to this and you're a resident, okay, yeah, you failed a bunch in residency. To Steph's point, you come out, you're going to fail a lot. And you are well served to have mentors, friends, other people who can bail you out.
You're going to want a safety net.
And you're going to want a safety net that bails you out clinically. You're going to want a safety net that bails you out mentally as well. I am successful because of my failures. It's made me so much more successful. And they could have, I've had several that certainly could have destroyed me, but they made me better.
Well, Bob McNeil quote for the day. Put it on your wall.
There we go. We've had several.
There it is.
And if you don't want to hear that quote, you know what they should do, Grant? They should turn off the podcast.
Turn it off, people.
Turn off the
podcast. Yeah, exactly. Well, we love what you're doing, man. And it is such
Thanks so much for having us.
We don't get invited many places.
He loves saying that.
I do say that. We keep getting invited. We don't get invited back many places, though. That's where Grant's different. We'll get invited once.
Me and my wife are always saying that, you know, like, how come no one ever invites our family over for dinner on Sundays? There's eight of us. Like, we don't get invited many places.
Oh, exactly. Wow. Big family.
Yeah. Well, thanks for what you're doing. Anything else you need to ask us, or have we filled the...
No, the only question is, will you do another podcast with me someday?
Never. We love what you're doing. What's your answer, Steph?
For what?
Well, he just asked a question. Are we ever going to do a pod?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I thought that was in the ether. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Good. You're doing important things, and none of us that are content creators know really what's the impact we're making. And if you change one person's life, if you change one
starfish story
resident's life, is that important? You know, I think we all want to make a difference in this world and just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, to what Grant was saying earlier, I mean, if you think that you're only affecting you, the people you train as well are going to be affected by the choices you make today.
Yeah, I love that. Well, you guys are awesome. Thank you for taking the time this morning to do this. And let's come up with some more content, more topics, and hit it again.
Let's do it.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you, guys.
All right. You too. Thanks, guys. Thanks, listeners.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Everyday Oral Surgery. For more information on these podcasts, please visit everydayoralsurgery.com. I love feedback and would be very grateful if you would reach out to me via my email, grantstuckey@gmail.com, and let me know what you thought of this episode. Or you can text me at 720-441-6059. Additionally, if you have any topics you'd like to hear about, or if you would like to be a guest on the podcast, please, please email or text me. I found many of my interviewees through people who have been contacting me and have been listening, and I've gotten so many great ideas for more podcasts, and that's what helps keep the podcast rolling. So really appreciate you making that extra effort and helping me out with feedback and knowing what to do next on the podcast. Thank you so much.